Either the last thing you did was terrible, and you're pretty sure the next one's going to be terrible, or the last thing you did was great, and you have no idea how you're going to measure up. But we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how to keep going either way on I Should Be Writing Season 19, Episode 3.
Well, I should be writing.
Hello, folks. This is I Should Be Writing. It is the podcast for wannabe fiction writers, and I'm your host, Mer Lafferty. And we live stream this show weekly on Thursdays on twitch.tv/mightymer, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And then my fabulous producer cleans it up, and we put it in the podcast feed by the next Monday. In an ideal world. I am, if you're new, my name is Mer Lafferty, and I have written 8 books, I think? Published 8 books. And been podcasting since 2004. This show has been going on since 2005. I try to start every episode with accountability and prove that I'm actually doing what I'm urging you to do, which is write. And, I actually finished the copy, not the copy edits, that's the next round. I finished the edits, the latest edit pass on Chaos Terminal, my next book, today. In fact, that's why I'm a little bit late, because I was determined to finish it. And finishing a book is hard. Starting a book is hard. The middle's part, it's all hard. It's all very difficult. But I got it done. And I think I achieved the humor and treacle cutter at the end. I learned from a comedy screenwriting class what the treacle cutter is, which is if you're watching a sitcom and there's a moment of true human emotion, it'll usually be followed up by some sort of funny or realistic or, you know, something to break the sweet, sappy emotion and remind you you're in a sitcom. The guy who taught the class was a writer for The Office, and he did the episode Business School, or yeah, I think it was Business School, and it ends with the only person, like only 3 people showed up for Pam's show, and one of them was Michael, and he's telling her how amazing her art is and how proud he is of her, and he gives her a big hug, and then she hugs him back, and she's very grateful, and then she gets this funny look on her face, and she's like, is there something in your pocket? And he says, a junkie, and he had candy bar in his pocket, and that was the treacle cutter. So now you've learned something, what a treacle cutter is. You'll usually find it in a lot, if you watch for it, in sitcoms, whenever they end on a high emotional note, that will go in there. So yeah, the edits are done. I'm very happy about that. And now I get to play. Now I get to do play things, which is exciting. As for good news, this medical stuff I'm going through will be over tomorrow. That is excellent. Very happy news. And I finished my book, which is great. And I'm really excited to start working on some other stuff. So that's my news. If you guys have any good news, whether you're watching right now or listening later on the podcast, I want to hear your good news. And you can email me at mightymer@gmail.com or tell me right now, and I'll hit the yay button. Everybody loves the yay button. Underpop says, no rejection since last time. You know what? I'm hitting the yay button for that, because sometimes it's good not to get a rejection. Rejections are great. We celebrate rejections here because they indicate that you're a working writer. But sometimes it's good to not get one. We also celebrate sales, too. Don't get me wrong. One new rejection by Gwenega. Congratulations. Yay button for you. And rejection ding. I think I fixed it. Yes! I fixed it. So far, team rejections are up to 17 of 2023 already. J.S. Carter Gilson, getting back into a writing rhythm, an hour or two on the weekends now that I'm writing by hand. That's great. Can you tell us if you're comfortable why you're writing by hand? I'm always curious. I finally remembered, finally scoured my email. I'm finally getting through my email, and I'm going to find the good news someone sent me a couple of weeks ago. So carry on talking about your good news. Here we go. Paul says, good news for the podcast. Been a listener for several years. Thank you for your podcast. I finished the first draft of my first young adult novel, the second novel that I've drafted since listening to your show. Thank you for your advice, and more importantly, your vulnerability. Yeah, I'm all about the vulnerability on this show. Boy, howdy. So, yay button for Paul. Congratulations. You can put some yay buttons in the chat because you all should have access to one yay button or another for Under Pope and Gwenega and Paul. Let's cheer up all the things we've been able to do. I'm delighted to be back on the writing horse after being basically dead since early November. That's fantastic! Galax Alley, I like that name. Yay button for Galax Alley. Sitting in front of the computer was just not working anymore. I got a fountain pen, started writing, and it started to flow. That's fantastic. I'm a little jealous. I love fountain pens, I love blank books. My handwriting is so terrible that my brain works too fast, and I either have to make my handwriting almost illegible to keep up, or I'll forget where I was going because I'm trying to make a neat sentence. I use it for brainstorming, list making, things like that, but not the actual manuscript writing. I have trouble sometimes transcribing because mine is also horrible. Okay. Well, good luck. I'm all for feeding the fountain pen addiction, so I just bought some glass pens, you know, the ones that you dip in the ink. I thought I wouldn't like them, but they were on sale, so I bought them, and I like them. They write for longer than I expected they would. Murr, you are a penabler. Oh, preemie, I've missed you. So yeah, the question is good. It's, the question of how you keep going. Because a lot of times, we all know that when we work and, you know, you're supposed to make something and then the next one's supposed to be better and the next one's supposed to be better. And we wish it, our creativity and our talent and our careers would go, you know, one step up, climb the ladder, climb the staircase, climb the mountain, whatever, always go up. But that's not how it's going to work. You might write something that's like 4 out of 10, and then the next thing you write, it might be 3 out of 10. You don't know. Experience is a slow grind. Or you might be in a situation like me. I've heard names of people doing this, but I don't want to mention any because it's not my story to tell. But I know of other writers whose maybe their first book was a massive hit, and following that up was a challenge. You know, I interviewed Veronica Roth near the end of last year about her new book, and, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, how do you follow up a book like Divergent? I believe it was Gene Wolfe told Neil Gaiman, when Neil finally said he felt like he knew how to write a book, Gene's like, no, you don't. You know how to write that book. You don't know how to write a book, because the next book's going to be different. And that is true for me anyway. Where are those out of 10 ratings coming from? Sales? No, I'm saying if you were to rate your own work or run it through a workshop, you can't be 100% sure that the next story is going to be better than the last story, even though we would like to think that experience works like that. I was just trying to figure out how to quantify. 5 out of 5 bugs, exactly, Preemie. And what if you want to switch genres or subgenres or styles? Exactly, Kids Are Asleep. That's another scary thought. But I've been thinking about it because I had a book come out a couple of years ago called Six Wakes. It was a surprise hit. You know, it didn't make any lists, and it wasn't a bestseller. It earned out really fast, but that's because I took a 1/3 pay cut after my first After my first book, I think I've said these numbers before. I'll be honest with them. My first deal was for 2 books. It was for $15,000 a piece, so it was a $30,000 deal. They did not perform as well as the publisher had hoped, so the next offer was for 1 book for $10,000. And that was a major ego hit. But that book was 6 Wakes. And so it certainly earned out in 4 months, and so that was nice. That's the one good thing about low advances. They'll earn out fast. But regardless of how much I made on the front end, I made more on the back end, and I got several award nominations for the book. And my ego was held in check by the publisher not wanting any more in that universe. But I felt pretty good about myself. And Station Eternity, while it's doing fine, actually, I just heard it's going into a second printing, so that's good news. That's great news. I'm gonna hit the A button for myself. Second printing, good news. But it's not 6 Wakes. I already know that. And the weird thing is, what I've been struggling with is I just finished up book 2 to a series that wasn't as good as the book before it. So it's like, even if I, where am I going with this? Hell. If I didn't have faith in how Station Eternity did, you'd think I could go to a different story, but no, I'm writing book 2, so I'm writing, I know this can't be another 6 Wakes either. I'm hoping it's standalone. It's hard to write standalone science fiction in a series, because you gotta make sure that everybody who picks up book 6, they need a quick intro into the world. It's not just like, you know, a Miss Marple or Poirot or Franny Fisher book. Or Sherlock Holmes. You pick them up and they're in their setting, and you don't need to explain the setting too much. But if it's science fiction or fantasy, you gotta make sure you let everybody know. So I'm hoping book 2 stands alone, but I still have to explain why she's on the space station. I have to explain the fact that the space station is a sentient being, and who all these aliens are. So you should be able to pick it up, but you'll still understand it better if you get book 1. So following, and the weird thing about series is, just math says, not everybody who buys book 1 are going to like book 1. So there's always a diminishing number on every subsequent book in a series. So I know that book 2 can't be, sell as well as book 1. So those are various things, you know, that's been going through my head. I don't know what book three is going to be. I don't know if they want it to be another Midsummer Murders or not. I think they're happy with the one I just turned in. I'm happy with it. I had a lot of fun writing it. Okay, so I've established what these are. Comparing stuff to our last project is something we all do. It's just human nature. It's how you know whether you're getting better or not. You know, it's a good thing usually. It's, you know, when you're exercising, it's okay, I ran faster than I did yesterday. I lifted heavier things than I did yesterday. But in art, it's harder to quantify that unless you use the bug method like Preemie. So, how you keep going, I was really hoping I would come up with some brilliant idea or someone in chat would tell me, but actually, it's going to be annoying, but I'll follow it up, I promise. You just do. You can't control how your work is received. You just can't. One of the funniest pieces of one scene of a movie that I remember in, like, the last 40 years was Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, or not the best movie, but I don't even remember the plot, but I remember at the end, they make a lot of money. But what they do is they spend that money by going around to everyone who ever said something mean to them on the internet and punch them. That's what they spend their money on. I thought that was hysterical. And that is the perfect indication of why you can't respond to reviews, why you can't respond to the person on Twitter who said, I read this and it sucked. You just can't. It's impossible. And, you can't control how your stuff's going to be received. You can't control. You're going to write something. I guarantee this. You're going to write something that you think is amazing. And you're going to write something that you thought was just writing off the top of your head to get something in on time. And that second thing is going to be the one that people go wild for. This has happened to me more than once. I did this in college. I wrote a story that I'd like poured my heart and soul into, and nobody liked it. And I wrote a short story when I had a deadline and no ideas. And I wrote it about me working in a coffee shop because I was a college kid working in a coffee shop. And that one was the hit. I have no idea why. So, first, whatever you think about your work, it's good. It's good to have confidence in your work. But know that whether you think it's crap or you think it's brilliant, everyone else is going to have their own opinion. And you can't control that. All you can do is create. So, you create. That's how you keep going. As for the flippant, you just do. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. There's, when my kid was a newborn, I had a friend who had, preemie twins, and she'd had her kids several months before I had mine, but in the way their development worked was that by the time mine came around, they developed at the same rate. So these were all like newborns or babies or toddlers or something, kind of the same age, even though the twins were technically several months older. But it's like, I'm dragging and I'm feeling like I'm spending the last bit of my energy every day taking care of one baby and who came to term and was healthy. And I said to her, like, how do you do twins? I don't see how you could do twins. And she's like, I just do. I have to. And it reminded me that your mind gives you the energy it thinks you need to do the thing. And it's going to give you all that energy to do the thing. It's not holding some back just in case you have another twin along the way. Um, And this is cool in some ways. I know I've told this story before, I apologize, but some may not have heard it. I guess Numbers Ninja was about 4 months old when my husband was going to go on a business trip, and I was doing the whole using all of my energy during the day to be a parent, and then at night, my husband came home, and we both parented, and it was a relief. And I'm like, he's going away on a business trip. How am I going to be a 24-hour parent? I don't see it happening. And I was so scared, and I did it. And it was because my brain did the whole, okay, well, you have to do this much for this long. Here's the energy you need. There's a downside to this, which is when you don't have a deadline. Whether you're an amateur or a pro just writing something that's not contracted, when you don't have a deadline, your brain's like, how important is this? Should I really give you energy for this? I don't know. To read more scientific stuff on what I'm talking about, I believe I read it in This Is Your Brain on Sports, which was a fascinating book, if you're curious. But this concept of your brain just kind of handing out bits of energy as it thinks you need throughout the day to do whatever you're going to do was just fascinating to me. So if you're a mom of twin newborns, it's going to give you, you're going to be tired. You're going to be exhausted, but your brain will give you the energy you need to do the work. And if you have only one, the brain's going to give you the energy you need to do that. It's not like you have a store of energy off to the side that you can tap into if there are suddenly two. So, you have to remove your ego and just say, okay, well, it's the next book. I'm going to write it. It's going to be okay. Because the alternative is not doing it. And, you know, our emotions mess us up more than anything else in our career. Whether the emotion is believing one review that said it sucked, or believing it was time to give up, according to one awful person who doesn't see you as a human being and just sees you as a content mill. Or if we have doubt that because we wrote something terrible that one time, we're never going to write good again. But I have so many emotions. I know, Daniel, I know. That is why we're our own worst enemy. I mean, how many of you have had people tell you, like, you're a wonderful writer. I don't know why you're so worked up about this. I mean, a spouse, a friend, somebody in your workshop. It's, I'm sure someone has said it to you. But you are still going, judging everything you can. Underpope says, I had therapists who recommended I quit writing. I should have fired him then and there, but for some reason I didn't. But you didn't stop writing either, did you, Underpope? Lurking and feeling called out. I'm sorry, the Plishk. I would like to give up, i.e. publishing. It's hard to run a marathon while constantly being handed crumbs. This isn't enough fuel to run on. Yes. Yes, it is, Preemie. I agree with you. Rather. Sorry. Yeah, I might, later on this year, I might do another breakdown of a huge advance, because I hate being the bearer of bad news, but when people hear, like, huge six-figure deal, they think you're just sitting back and having custom-made houses built on all the land you just bought, and, you know, you're eating gold for breakfast. And unfortunately, that's not. Yeah. Unfortunately, it breaks down in a much worse way. I think what's going to happen for Preemie is I will revert to not believing that the final step of writing is publishing. Final step is finish story, not sell story. Do you think you'll self-pub, Preemie, or you just want to finish the story? Please break down huge advances because I'm so tired of reading about that everywhere. Okay, I can do that now. It's easier with graphics, but, I just recently told someone I want a custom-built house in Asheville money. Yeah, that's not happening as a writer. It can happen as a writer. I have a friend who I knew was doing well, but I didn't realize how well until I saw pictures of their custom-built house. They're not in America, they're somewhere else. But still, custom-building a house, I think, says money in any country. My therapist told me your talent will get you out of this, and it was the nicest thing anyone ever said to me. I'm still waiting for him to be proven right, sadly. Talent is great, Kiki, but you know, the hard work will also help the talent go. I guess you could think of talent like a plow, but you gotta have something pull it. That was a metaphor I just came up with, and I'm really proud of it. Preemie's not sure about self-pub. It looks like more work, not less. I'm chronically ill and have a full-time job. My brain is not giving me much energy, let's just say. No, that's fair. Yes, we're all glad you're still writing under Pope. I don't think anyone should ever stop writing. What you do with the writing? Like Preemie said, that can change. Especially for your mental health. But, I mean, if everybody watching is an adult, then that means you grew up writing and telling stories, and you kept doing it even after adulthood said, well, if you're not perfect by this, if you're not ready to be a pro at this, then clearly you need to put your efforts towards something more that you are good at. And so you're already further along than a lot of people. I had an English teacher in high school tell me I was the finest writer he'd ever taught. Talk about pressure. Yeah. Yeah, always look after your health first, guys. It's so hard, and it's awful that, you know, you have to make this decision. But really, when you choose work over your health, eventually you won't have either. Whereas if you choose your health over work, then hopefully you'll get one, and then which will help you get the other. Will says, how much do you think an author should take the promotion of their own books versus publisher? Oh, God. I don't know. I really don't know. I think publishers should put more into promotion than they do. Especially for the books that need it. Stephen King does not need promotion. He doesn't. Someone goes to a bookstore and looks and sees Stephen King on the shelf. They will buy it. But the unknown people? No, we need the help. But breaking down an advance, let's say, I think I've memorized these numbers. I'll put a caveat and say that advances are now worse than they were before. Before it was, you get a certain amount on signing, a certain amount on turning in, and a certain amount on final publication. Now they've spread it out even more, where, like, in my contract, I get a certain amount when I turn in an outline, and it's approved. And so, yes, the pie is still the same size, but it's in smaller and smaller pieces, which is, you know, kind of annoying. But, so you say, let's just take it round number. You get $100,000 for a 3-book deal. That's very exciting. And first, they're going to give you 30% or 33% of each book for signing. So that's like $33,000. That's a nice check. Except you're not going to get $33,000 because your agent's going to take 15 of that, which hopefully they've earned. They're going to take 15%, rather. So 15% of 30,000, 33,000, I don't know how much that is, but we're down into the 20s now. And self-employment tax is a pain in the butt. It is outrageous. Our previous commander-in-chief did us no favors. And let's face it, you should be putting money away for retirement if you can. So the government's going to take, in the United States, 30 to 35% of that. And then you're going to want to take a certain percentage of that and put it away. Ursula calls it sending money to camp, because that's what, in, you know, retirement investing is. You send the money away and it comes back, hopefully, with friends. You don't always want that to happen when you send your kid off to camp, but $4,650 is 15% of $33,000. Thank you. So, so now you've lost 15% to the agent and you've lost 33-ish percent of that to your editor. Or, sorry, to the government. Still a nice size check. You know, that's still more than I made in my very first salaried job. So that's nice. But then the next check comes when you turn in the final of book one. Very likely you've sold the book on the power of book one, so it's pretty close to being done. You just have to go through a couple of edit passes, which is a couple of months. So you turn in the final, and now you get 10% of that one book. No, sorry. You get your 30%, but you only get it of book one. And so that is 11,000-ish. Yeah, that's right. It's 11,000. So you get an $11,000 check. Again, take 15% of that, and then take 35% of that. And that's your next check. Book publishing takes about 18 months. So while you get to work on book two, you have to wait probably a year until the next $11,000 check that's coming when the book comes out. Now, hopefully somewhere in that time, you wrote and turned in book two. So that's another $11,000 check. But time is passing. And you could have something like I had last year, which I could not edit a book. I had two projects, and they were both just coming back constantly from the editors, needing more and more rewrites. And it was devastating to my self-esteem, but it was also bad because I wasn't turning in anything to get that final draft turn-in advance check. So it was delaying my next income. And, you know, when you're salaried, working any sort of day job, you get money on a regular basis. But in publishing, if you can't turn in a draft, you don't get paid. So, more time is passing, and each check is basically 11,000 minus 15 minus 35%. And I worked it out at the time that I did all this math. It was several years ago, like over a decade ago. But I took the hourly shift wage at McDonald's and put it up against the person who got the big fancy six-figure deal. McDonald's paid more. Because remember, this is spread over years that you're going to get paid this. John Scalzi got, what, a $4 million deal with Tor? Granted, that's still freaking amazing. And he's still rich as hell. But no, they did not write him a $4 million check. They're giving him money over 10 years spaced out as he turns in books. So that's how that worked. This is why I made Scalzi buy me dinner at Calcon in October. Yeah, Scalzi's a good egg. How much of the story can I tell? I don't know. He basically told me that he wanted to know whether a certain thing in Hollywood, like Hollywood deals, was a good idea or a bad idea. And so he's like, well, I'm rich, so I can afford to take this chance. And I can tell you, it's not a good idea. So I appreciated both his honesty and his willing to, you know, screw himself out of money just to see what would happen so I didn't have to take that chance. It sounds like freelancing on steroids, honestly. Yes. The carrot is there, but you control the stick. You sort of control the stick. If they don't like what you're writing, then they're going to take the stick away and hold it further out. He was lovely and very friendly. Yes, Scalzi is very lovely and very friendly. Sounds like I'll be keeping my day job no matter how big the advance is. Well, the good news, it's a slow building career. But as you write more books, you get more and more royalty payments. I'm still making money on Shambling Guide to New York City, which came out a year ago, a decade ago. Not a year ago, God. It's not a lot of money, but as you build your backlist, that money comes in. And that's nice because you're not doing anything for it. Foreign rights get sold. This is good for traditional publishers. I don't know if self-pub people have a way of doing this. I think Joanna Penn talked about it, but I'm not sure. But when foreign rights get sold, you also do no extra work and you get free money. You know, that's where some money comes in. Hollywood money, your film or TV show will probably never get made. That's another cold splash of water. I just want to ready you for. But they still pay you for it. Hollywood spends stupid money on stuff that never happens. Never. So I've made more money on the Shambling Guide's options than I made on the book. Have you seen the Shambling Guide TV show? I haven't. So yeah, it's other money comes in from time to time, but it's not a career you can count on right away. And I hate, you know, this is such, it's supposed to be such a hopeful podcast. And I hate giving you the bad news, but I've heard stories about like 20-something YA writers who hit it big and get a huge deal and don't know what they're getting into. And they take their first big advance check and they buy something stupid. Or they quit their day job or something, and then they don't understand, like, where is the next check coming from? Why don't I have all the money? What do you mean I have to wait for all these books to sell before I get another check from the publisher? Nobody teaches this. That's why I have my other show, Ditch Diggers, because nobody sits authors down to teach. Here's how advances work. Here's how agents work. Here's what you can expect. Here's what advance means. Advance means it's a loan you don't have to pay back. Sort of. Basically, they're giving you money, technically, so you can eat while you write the book. But then once the book comes out, say you make $3 on every book sold. You have to sell as many books for those $3 to add up to your advance before you get more money. Which is the one good thing about low advances, because they can earn out pretty quickly. So I really hate doing the bad news, but it's better to know, really. Preemie says, I have two books coming out this summer in Catalan. I was excited but confused. Yeah, Ursula has sold those foreign language rights. I'm still trying to figure out why Six Wakes has not sold in the UK or World English. No idea. You can sell the film TV rights every few years. If it doesn't get made, yes. The film and TV rights usually are for about 18 months, in my experience. So they'll say, you know, we're going to give you this much money, and in 18 months, if we haven't made it yet, we have the right to buy it again from you, or we'll set you free to sell it to somebody else. Which is nice. Oh my God, did I tell you guys about California? Did I tell you about California taxes? So I got a bill from the California state tax people saying I owed them money. And I'm like, I don't live in California. What the hell? And It turns out that California's passing laws that says it gets to tax money that is made in California, which is Hollywood. Let's just be honest. That's what they're targeting. So I make $20,000 on a film deal, and then money's coming out of California. I have to pay California taxes. So yeah, that was a cold splash of water, and I looked it up, and it sounds like a scam. It really does. But I looked it up, and I saw, yeah, California's doing this. The one good thing was you're not allowed to be taxed twice. So I basically sent it to my accountant and said, okay, what do I do? And what he did was calculated how much I owed California, but then he calculated how much North Carolina owed me, because North Carolina is not allowed to tax me on the money coming out of California. I don't know, but I did get to turn in a form to North Carolina saying, hey, can I have this money back, please? Because I have to pay California. And they did. And then California sent me another bill because this was from money several years ago, so there was a late fee on money I did not know I owed. That was fun. That was really fun. Yeah, it does feel illegal, but it's because so many people are like incorporating in Nevada to avoid California taxes. California taxes are higher than North Carolina, I can tell you that. I don't know Christian writing. All I know is I made money coming out of, I mean, maybe it's business to business. Maybe a business pays you like Hollywood rights to something. I don't know all the details. All I know is how it hit me. And so I told my attorney or accountant that we need to keep an eye on this and figure this out for the future so it doesn't happen again. So I don't know. Yes, Christian writing. Hire an accountant. It's taxes are so weird. You know, I miss the days of having a salaried job and owning nothing. And so you turn in one form and the government sends you a check for like $200 and it's exciting. And then like you become an adult and get investments and 401ks and suddenly and then you publish on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and make money on Twitch and Patreon, and so the tax forms just come in. And it's like, wow, I'm making money, but why is this adding to my headache? Money's supposed to be happy, right? So yeah, I highly recommend getting an accountant. I know it feels like it costs a lot, but I think it's one of those things where if you don't have one, it's going to cost you more. If not now, it'll cost you more later. Yeah, preemie, that's what I did. I asked for I asked another friend who was doing freelance creative stuff who he used, so I could get somebody who understood the various freelance writers or freelance creators' income. So I love my accountant. He's great. And he's got a science fiction name. His last name is Borg. I got off topic, but it's important to talk about, because it breaks my heart when it's like I know what my numbers are. I know how many people are listening and watching. But I always feel like when I've been talking about something for years and I hear about somebody making the mistakes, like I said, of somebody getting a huge book deal and making the mistake of quitting their job or spending all of the money instead of putting aside a certain amount for taxes or whatever, I'm just like, is no one listening to me? I've been talking about this for years. But I realize not everybody listens, so I need to come back on it every once in a while. This is the whole, and you know, a lot of people want to shy away from the whole, no, it's art. It's not business. I want to talk about my art. That's great. But you're going to suffer if you don't realize that once you start selling, it is a business. Even if they are listening to you, they don't always listen. Yeah, Sometimes I get fan mail saying, I've been listening to you for years, and here's a basic question that you've answered 20 times, and I want to know if it's any different when I ask it. We had to pay a not insignificant sum last year, only to have the government turn around and give us all of it back because they changed the tax policy. Well, that's not bad. Canadian Revenue Agency is like, you're a writer? What is that? Yeah. I'm like, do you guys watch TV or see books in the store? Maybe if you don't even read books, you see that there are books being made. Do you wonder who makes those? Or how it gets made? Or if they get paid? I think sometimes what we struggle with, as Preemie has said, the realities and the business parts, they're not fun. And they can bring you down. And they can, you know, when you're upset about these things, whether it's being burnt out or, like me, if I overdo it, I'll get a migraine. And Monday, I thought, it's like I looked at the edits and they were all minor, but there were a lot of them. And I thought, I can get through this today. And I did. But I also meant I sat at my desk for 7 hours straight writing. And I didn't do anything else, like get up and move around and stretch. And so I'm still suffering. And it's not good for me. Just the reality of having a writer's life is that you do have to think about things like self-care and taxes and dealing with your own emotions when you wonder if your next book is going to be better or worse than what you just put out. And wonder if you're done. Wonder if you're washed up. Like I said last time, Stephen King does okay financially, but I did hear him say, do you know what it's like for someone to tell you that the favorite book of yours that they read was published in 1980? People still tell him that The Stand is their favorite book. And he's like, great. Cool. I will write a book about my eventful life as Matt Wallace's bodyguard. Preemie, that would sell like hell. Seriously. If you wrote, you wrote The Bodyguard, only with you as Matt Wallace's bodyguard, that would be amazing. I mean, I've got like a 20 in my bag. I could throw that at you. I really want this story. Matt says he's up for it. Of course he's up for it. Matt once told me how to beat him in combat. Two things are Matt Wallace's weaknesses. Low ceilings and his knees. I know this. The U.S. has a specific section of write-offs for teacher and instructor materials, but it's just for K-12. So if you teach swim classes or something and try to write off pool cleaning services, nope, illegal, sorry. And they don't tell you it's just for K-12. Wow. Yes, but Preemie, you're supposed to be protecting Matt, not attacking him. Part of what I enjoy coming here is to listen to you guys who are good friends banter. Well, good. Quaint Noir, always sweep the knee, indeed. Sweep the leg. What, plot twist that the bodyguard's going to attack? At the end of the day, it boils down to the fact, do you like telling stories? Well, then that's how you're going to write the next one. You can look at it like I do, which is, well, if it sucks, I'll at least have gotten it out of my head and I won't be thinking about it anymore. And hopefully I will have garnered some kind of experience points by writing a different character or doing dialogue in a better way or something. So even if the whole story isn't good, maybe I will have gained something somewhere. You know, no wasted words. But it is a business, guys. Don't forget that. And if somebody tells you that you should be thinking about your craft as art and nothing else, I promise you they've either got a wealthy spouse or they're a trust fund baby or they've already had a bestseller. I remember a friend of mine told me he went to a talk by the guy who wrote The Notebook. And I think it was like business advice for writers. And when he said, when you've made your first million, my friend's like, yep, then I checked out. This guy was not talking to me. Thank you, Nicholas Sparks. So I'm going to end this here for the podcast, and we'll hang around a little bit more and do our BarCon. If you want to participate in our BarCon, come to the live show Tuesdays and Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, twitch.tv/mightymer, and you can hang out with us in the chat. Or you can support the Patreon at patreon.com/mightymer and get the whole episode delivered to you that way. But you can find me at mightymer@gmail.com if you want to email me. And I keep saying that like it's my website. Like I haven't been saying this for decades. Or merverse.com is where you can find my books and my podcasts and the magazine that I edit with The Kids Are Asleep called Escape Pod. Hugo nominated 3 times, I think. Ignite nominated 2x. Yeah, and I'll be back streaming Monday, I hope. I'm sorry I haven't been able to keep up with my streaming schedule lately, but I'm going to try to get back on it. I won't be doing Ditch Diggers. I'll be doing something else. I've been wanting to do one of these solo RPGs that I got. I got The Broken Cask for Christmas, and I bought Umbra a while ago. These are another, if you saw me do Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, it's another kind of solo game that sounds interesting. And then I'll be back doing BarCon on Tuesday. So, yeah, if you subscribe on Twitch, then you'll just get a notification in a perfect world that I've gone live. So, I guess that's it for me. Thank you for listening, and you should be writing. I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support. I should be writing. On my craft, I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft, but I'm sitting home watching Doctor Who. Yeah, I'm sitting home watching Doctor Who.